You are listening to a weekend gathering of Shelter Church located in Kettering, Ohio. If you'd like to learn more about who we are, visit us at shelterchurch.tv.
In this series called Carved, where we're talking about who are we as the people of God? What does it mean for God to shape us and mold us and make us his own? And also, who are we as Shelter Church, as a group of people who come together, who believe in this? And you've heard testimonies from Don and messages from people like Jay, and you're beginning to kind of see how God is a God who doesn't just say, here's a ticket to heaven, I'll see you in 30 years. Good luck with all that stuff you got to deal with here. He's a God that's in the midst of it with us. And he's a God that's so powerful that the hurt, the loss, the brokenness, all of that is not something that is a waste, but it's something that God can actually use. It's something that God can take and turn and use for good. Romans 8:28 says that for those of us who are called according to his purpose, and for those of us who love him, he works out all things for good. And the story you're going to hear today from Tim's life really, really exemplifies that. So if you would, welcome with me Tim Zucchini to the stage, one of our own. Tim, you've been with, how long have you been at Shelter? I don't have it on. I'm really on top of things this morning, right?
First service was
for. I know, right? Shoot.
I don't know. I'd have to ask, sir. How long? Four years.
4 years.
Four years.
Wow. And if you know Tim at all, you're thinking like me. What was it like growing up? Like, what was that like?
My brother. It was a dark and stormy night. No, I grew up, basically, I was born into an alcoholic family. My biological father was an abusive alcoholic. My mom was an alcoholic at the time. And they'd get in complete throwdown fights and, yelling, screaming, hitting, all that other good stuff. And then mom up and got saved at a Baptist church. And left him and moved us out, and then ended up dating my dad for a little bit, who I call Dad Frank, and remarried. And Dad was about 4 years removed from Vietnam and had a lot of PTSD that he wasn't dealing with. So, he couldn't be there for some things. Growing up, he just did not know how to communicate. He didn't know what to do. But he loved me, and he worked. But that working was his thing of disappearing. I will just work 12, 13, 14 hours and then come home and sleep. And, so that was his thing. But we grew up in this church that was very legalistic. Mm. When you showed up, you didn't talk about your brokenness. You didn't talk about where you'd been. It was all the whole I'm blessed face. Oh, I'm so blessed. The Lord has blessed me this week. And you didn't do those things. And it was extremely legalistic. I think when I was 6 years old, mom, went to the bathroom. It was the end of service. They're doing a prayer. I think I was 6 years old. I was coloring, and some guy snatched me up, spanked me on the butt, and said, "You need to pay attention to prayer." So it was serious legalism. And literally, we had a guest pastor show up one day that
Those
was talking
fun.
About, oh, yeah. He was talking about, Smurfs being small blue demons, and you were letting demons into your child's life, and then he got onto Dungeons and Dragons, and then, here's this Beatles album, let's play this backwards. Did you hear that? It said the devil. It's like, I didn't hear anything, but,
the church loves its conspiracy theories.
Yeah, and but the church ate it up because it just went right with the legalism stuff. So next thing I know, I'm maybe 14, 15 at the time, and all my Beatles albums and my Rolling Stones.
That's
and,
a tragedy.
My Knack and everything else is being drug out and burned. My Dungeons and Dragons stuff is being drug out and burned. My, cassette tapes are being burned. Had AC/DC t-shirt. I throw that in the fire. And everybody's singing hymns and praising the Lord as my stuff is going up in flames,
That definitely didn't look like a cult, I'm sure.
Yeah, oh no, it didn't look cultish at all. So that was where my sort of bottom fell out with God. Because, A, you're God the Father. Well, I have a father that's just not there.
Right.
And the one before that is just violent. And, you know, and here's how your church treats me. I don't fit in.
Right.
Nothing about me fits in. I am not good enough. I've been what was called a bastard by one member of the church because, you know, A, I wasn't, didn't have my real dad. And the worst thing, my new dad was Catholic. Didn't even show
up
to the church.
Don't say the C word in church, please.
Didn't even show up to church on Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night.
Heaven forbid.
Revival.
We do Sunday once, yeah, one time a week.
A Saturday afternoon for something else. But, yeah, it was.
Wow.
So I sort of just had it with God by the time I was about 16. And I wasn't fitting in anywhere at school either. And when I did fit in, I fit in with this group of nerds who all, you know, now own their own companies and things like that. But they played Dungeons and Dragons, and you can't hang out with those demonic children anymore. They weren't allowed to the house anymore. Wasn't allowed to be around those friends. Dad wanted me to do sports. This does not do sports.
No way.
And then he signed me up, of all things, soccer. Stand in a hot field and run for 3 hours? Oh, please, can I?
Wow.
May I please?
Why America doesn't love soccer more.
So needless to say, me and Dad sort of, we fell out there too because he was all about sports. And that was somewhere where he thought he could connect. But I just, I joined a bowling team. And that was about as sporty as I was wanting to get at the time. So at 16, I was basically done with church, done with God.
Yeah.
And I just had this big disparage between, you know, I get this Jesus guy. I like this Jesus guy. Mm. This dude is cool. This dude doesn't care about my past. This dude accepts me for who I am. Okay. But this judgmental jerk that sits on his throne with his big white beard, and I don't like this guy at all. I don't, you know, I don't get it. And these can't be the same person. Mm. It didn't make any sense. So I was like, you know what? I'm done. I'm done doing the church thing. I'm done doing the rules. I'm going to go through this Bible and break every rule I can find in this Bible. And just, I'm going to do my own thing. Mm. And, you know, did a couple things. It's like, oh, I'm not struck down dead, so let's just have at it.
You must be off the clock.
I just, you know, at 16, got my first car, and I was off doing my own thing. And then the crowd that, of course, you know, trying to find that crowd that I fit in with, well, here's some guys. They play D&D, but they hide it well. And they smoke a little weed, and they drink, and they're seniors, and I'm a sophomore. And holy crap, coming from all these generations of alcoholics, look how much I can drink. I can drink these guys under the... It's like a natural ability. It's like my superpower.
It's your spiritual gift.
You know, it's my spiritual gift. So I fell into that crowd because that crowd accepted me for who I was, and that was the first time I'd got that from somebody. But I had to keep those friends hidden.
Right.
And then, you know, I'd buy, you know, my Slayer tapes, my Metallica tapes, and those would, like, stay hidden in my car. Literally took the door key off my car keychain just so mom could not get into the car and see what I had in there. I kept that in a magnet up underneath the car. So that was the thing I grew up into. And so, in about the time I was 16, it all started going downhill. And you can only do those things. You know, I had friends along the way hit the brakes and go, oh no, we're not going as far as the Christian kid is going. Your mom takes you to church every day? Yep. And you're doing what? Yep. So, you know, I learned how to fake it like the rest of them. I just put on my happy face and I'm blessed. And I mean, we were just, you know, it was just off and me and a kid that I went to church with, they had love loaves. You'd take these little plastic loaves home and you'd stuff them full of money and then you'd bring them into church and you'd give them to the poor. Well, you know, we had to do church Sunday morning, Sunday night. Right. So he'd come over to my house after we did the Sunday morning service and we'd go hang out and then we'd come back in Sunday night. Well, we learned while everybody else was in church, we'd go dig into the love loaves, pull all the quarters out of them, and then we'd go to Malibu Grand Prix up near the Dayton Mall and play video games all day and then, you know, go back into church that night. So I was learning, you know, how to steal from the poor. I was doing all sorts of wonderful things at that point because I was just done.
You're done.
Done with church. So after that, it just all started spiraling out of control and up in one day, boom, 4.5 years in prison.
Really? Yeah, some of you might not know this, but Tim has had a stint in prison. I've not been a permanent resident of said prison, but I hear it's pretty rough. things are pretty low. Can you tell us how you got there and what that was like in prison?
At that point in my life, I was becoming, you know, you make all these things of I'm going to break every rule God ever gave me, but you still have your own set of, I've got my own personal code. I won't do A, B, or C.
Right.
And it, literally, it was maybe three things on that code that I wouldn't do at that time. But snorted heroin with a guy. Mm. And the girl that I was dating at the time. Mm. And I like this stuff. Then found out that him and her were having relations behind my back. And that was basically my bottom out point. That's when I was just like, you know what? Nothing loves me. I'm just, I can't do this anymore. I was waking up, literally woke up drunk under a bridge in Carillon Park, where the highway is.
Yeah.
Had one arm in the river because I just was passed out drunk, wearing a trench coat, laying there. I remember these guys pulling up under 10 speeds, stopping, getting off their 10 speeds and handing me money, thinking I was homeless under the bridge. I mean, it was that. I was, you know, wow. I just couldn't do it anymore. I was done. I wanted to end life. So I decided, all right, I'm going to go to her apartment, break in. I'm going to find her and him sleeping together. I'm going to kill them both. Mm. I'm going to go home, and I'm going to kill myself. Wow. And so I'd gone over there. He wasn't there. I took her purse, and I darn near strangled her to death. And that's when I hit that moment. I saw myself in the mirror when I was doing it, and I saw that alcoholic dad. Mm-hmm. And I just knew, no, this isn't what I wanted to be. So I told her to call the police and turn me in. I was done. I was just going to go to prison, whatever, or kill myself. I could hang myself when I got in there, maybe. You hear about it all the time.
Right.
But we're just going to end this thing. Just call the police. Do whatever. I'm sorry. So I went and tried to turn myself into the Oakwood Police Station, which was near there, and they kicked me out because I was there after hours.
Oh, Oakwood's a special place.
You could commit crime in Oakwood between the hours of 9 to 5.
Yeah, they reroute you if
they're
not.
They're very particular about when you're going to commit your crimes in Oakwood. So they kicked me out, so I went home to Mom and Dad's house. And because I knew Grandpa had a .38, I knew exactly where he kept it. Mm. I'll go to Mom and Dad's. I'm going to pass out on the couch for a little bit. I had my own apartment at the time, but you always end up going to Mom's. So go to my Mom and Dad's, see my sister, see them one last time. Go to Papa's, get the gun, go out to Grant Life, where I used to, you know, did all my partying and always it had a special spot out there where I'd go, mellow out, put the gun in my mouth, and just blow my head off and be done with it. So was there, passed out at Mom's, did all that, said my goodbyes. They didn't catch on to what I was doing. And Grandpa lived right across the street from Mom and Dad. So I was going to cross the street, go over, get his gun, and here comes that detective car, and you know who it is, you know. It's still got the little flashlight on the front of it, and they're staring at me hard when they're driving by, and I'm like, uh-oh, I think I've run out of time on that. So I went back over to Mom and Dad's, and next thing I know, the detectives came to the front door, and my mom said, well, I don't want him arrested in front of his sister, so can we just keep it quiet, and I'll send him out the back. So I went out the back where I was greeted by several SWAT team members and lasered pointed like, because it was Centerville. They like to do it up. If you got the gear, you need to break it out every once in a while and use it. So apparently I was like Al Capone at that point in time, you know, and
numero uno.
And so, you know, so that'll happen. Then, of course, you know, me not knowing what I knew about the courts, I admitted to everything. I admitted to things wasn't even being arrested for, you know, because I was just done. I was
right.
It was over. I was going to end my life. I was just done. So I'm just basically using the police department as my final confessional, I guess.
Wow.
But you know, and then just everything else, I thought, you know, I just give up. And it was, and that was when God sort of just stepped into the situation and said, you know, there's the horrible truth about prison, but I need to sit you down somewhere and you need to learn who I really am. So I'm going to sit you in prison. And because when I did this domestic, you know, it was somebody was like, well, maybe they'll charge you with domestic violence and they'll let you out. Well, they had a guy arrested in Kettering for domestic violence, and they let him out, and he went home, murdered his wife. This, when I committed this crime, was at the time of O.J. Simpson was going on.
So they weren't
going
to let you off.
I had a female judge, and I had a female prosecuting attorney. My female prosecuting attorney had also caught her boyfriend with a prostitute. Her boyfriend was my public defender.
Oh, Things weren't shaped up well for you in that situation.
No. They said plead guilty to aggravated burglary, and he said, I'll get you the minimum. And I thought, okay, well, I'll get the minimum. And I just get in there. I don't care. And they said 5 to 25 years. And I thought, oh, that's a minimum? That is the worst minimum I've ever heard. So I ended up going to prison and did about 4.5 years. But when I got in there, I finally got with real Christians for the first time. I was with guys that were just as beat up and broken as I was, that were trying to figure out this Christianity thing. And I had an absolutely outstanding chaplain and just a great group of guys that would come in and do Tuesday night Bible studies. One was a pig farmer. One was a businessman. I mean, it was just the craziest, not a normal group of people by any means. Like yeah, but it was weird. It was good. It was good while I was in there. It was where I needed to be at the time.
Wow. So now you talk about the chaplain Graves. How did he begin to kind of bring you into this Christianity thing? What was that like?
Chaplain Graves, what's funny is he was an old Southern Baptist, African-American man, loved his blues music, just a great guy, but not legalistic. This wasn't the thing that I grew up in. I thought all Baptists were going to be. I'm like, oh, great, not another
Here
one.
Here comes another
one. But I'm like, oh, this is what they're actually supposed to be like. Well, this is kind of nice. But he used to, what I used to call, throw you under the spiritual bus. Because I looked at him one day, and I'm like, I need a word from God. And he's like, well, I want you to go back to your prison cell, and I want you to read Psalms 119. And he didn't tell me that was going to be the longest psalm. That was a lot of psalms.
They never
right
do.
There.
Do they?
No.
They never let
it's
you
like know. A whole alphabet. That's a long alphabet, too. They had a few extra letters, I think.
I think somebody
lied to me about that. But he said, read that through and then come back to me and tell me what God says to you. So I came back to him and I said, well, I got this out of it. He's like, good. Go read it again. And for 4.5 years, he wouldn't give me anything else to read.
No.
That was it. He would send me back to read Psalms 119. Now, I've still got my Bible, and that thing is highlighted, underlined, color-coded. I mean, little A's and B's written in spots, because that was really
Braille.
Where it first, for the first time in my life, I saw in there that God gave his law out of love. And I was like, oh, he didn't give this thing to me because I couldn't do it, just to make me look bad, which is what I really believed at that point in time. I thought he just set up this standard that you can't reach just to look at you and laugh at you. You know, just like, well, you can't do that. Well, I would have blessed you, but nope, not now. I'm going to have to punish you instead.
Whoops.
So I saw this, you know, for the first time, my laws are out of love. They're not out of to tell you what to do. They're out of, hey, this is going to hurt. Don't touch the stove. It's hot. You know, this is what the laws are for. They're not there to, you know, harm you or show you can't do it. They're there because I love you. So I was starting to see that for the first time. And then and Chaplain Graves just kept pushing those buttons with me. I was like, well, I feel like I need to be part of the church. Good, you're leading worship this Sunday. I'm like, I don't sing in front of people ever. He's like, well, that's okay. I'm like, I only know white songs. He's like, well, they'll figure them out. You use the printer. You can print some off. I'm like, oh, man. So I started, you know, leading worship. Then I'm like, I don't do mornings. Please, anything. I like to sleep in. I'm trying to sleep the whole 4.5 years I'm here and just pretend it never happened. But yeah, he always did that. And then he pushed me again. You know, eventually when I got out, I ran into him again. And he had me doing sermons on Sundays.
Wow.
So
wow.
He just liked to. He saw in me what I couldn't see in me at the time.
That's amazing.
So.
That's amazing. Wow. And you eventually apparently did get out, correct?
I got out.
You're not still in prison, right?
I'm not on the run.
Okay, currently. Good to know.
Although I am wearing orange. I know it might have been a little, there would have been a jumpsuit.
You converted that very well. It looks very nice.
Yeah, this would have been my orange jumpsuit.
So what happened after you got out of prison?
I literally, the day I got out of prison, was on my way back in. I had got out and was going to go to church with Mom and go to the same old church that was legalistic. Because they'd done some things differently, and they were going to be a little bit different. Well,
right.
They were on their way.
They had a guy with a guitar
weren't.
Now, so it's like, yeah, oh, what?
They
maybe
got
something
drums.
Changed.
The devil's drums. They had those. I mean, they were just, you know. And I got there, and the first thing that happened is when I was walking down the hallway, some lady was coming down the hallway with her kid, knew I'd come out of prison, and took her kid and shoved it behind her and backed up against the wall. Like, would I just slap children now when I come out of prison? Is that my
Your criminality is like a disease. Yeah, it just spreads.
It just comes over and just, oh, is that a child? I've been to prison. It's okay. That's what we do now. So just come out and push children down in a church hallway. So I saw that, and the first thing that rolls through my head is, oh, all right, God, I see how this is. Your people don't accept me. It's still the same old crap.
Yeah.
I'm not doing this. I'm not doing this again. I'm getting out of here. And then my buddy from prison was actually going to meet me at the service. And he met me there at the singing. And this is the guy, when I got to prison, I knew that I couldn't keep doing the drugs. I had to be in recovery. So I went to the drug recovery unit, and me and him ended up leading a lot of the AAs and NAs and everything else, and, you know, had it really together while we were in there. Because it's easy to quit drugs when you're in a place that adds more time depending on how long your tail is. Well, mine was 25 years. So anytime I was caught with a dirty urine, I'd get an extra 5 years. So that much cinches, and they urine test you once a month. That was pretty much, you know,
you're out.
It's really easy to quit when there's no liquor store. They don't have a liquor store in prison.
Really?
Yeah. You'd think they'd have that in commissary.
I missed that. Yeah.
But I met him in there, and he'd been in a drug recovery unit with me, and he met me at church, and right there during worship, turned around and looked at me. He said, I've been out about 8 months before you have. He said, nobody will hire me. He said, nobody's going to hire you because we're ex-felons. He said, they don't want to hire us. He said, but I'm selling cocaine again, and if you want to make some money, come with me, and I'll show you how to sell cocaine. And I thought, okay. And right then and there, I wasn't even out 12 hours.
Wow.
And I'd already just taken everything that I'd learned, everything I'd worked on, and just hung it up and said, nope. Well, God, we tried it your way for 5 minutes. I'm done. So apparently I wasn't as prepared. And even Chaplain Graves looked at me and said, you're not ready to get out. And I should have just known. I was offended at it. You mean I'm not ready to get out? But he knew that I was just still teetering on the line of, if something bad comes your way, you're not ready. You're ready to throw in the towel at the first sign of trouble, and you're a Christian now. That's all you're going to see is trouble. You know, they don't tell you that when you get saved. But, you know, this isn't going to be a fun ride all the time.
Sometimes we paint it like that.
So then, you know, and then everything else that comes from that, you know, now I'm going to deal cocaine with him. Oh, well, where do we do that at? In bars. Oh, well, that's a fantastic idea. That's where I should be. I should be hanging out in bars. But I will say, I did meet my wife in the bar. So, and I still laugh to this
day. The Lord brings good out of all things.
Hey, she had all her teeth at this bar. I knew she was the one for me. And you think that's funny, but that is true. That is totally true at this place. So she got involved with me as I was heading spiraling out of control again. And why she married me, I have no idea.
Another miracle of God.
Dude, I even told her. It's like we were doing the vows, and they're like, in sickness and in health. I'm like, sick. So sick. I gave her every avenue to get out of there. But, you know, she wouldn't take it. So... God bless her.
God.
She's a special person.
So at that point, when you were dealing cocaine, when you were, you know, back into that life, what got you up in the morning?
The cocaine.
Oh.
Literally. I mean, you were out all night. You were just doing dumb stuff all the time. I had a job. We worked at Labor Works. It's a day labor job. He actually scheduled people to go out on jobs, and I actually drove the van. I'd meet him in bars and do the dealing and the stuff we were doing, so I'd be drunk, driving people back and forth to work in this van, and literally these folks would come back, cash their little day-long check, and buy drugs from us.
Wow.
Because we'd sell them right then and there. So
I mean,
I had my evilness all figured. I did have my, just how nasty of a person can I be? I had that down pat, you know, and it just did. There just really wasn't anything. I was starting to head down that road of, you know what, let's just end this thing, be done with it. And, you know, she She was really the only reason that kept the gun out of my mouth there for a while. But eventually, I decided to go tie one on one night, and I skipped school, and I skipped school with my English professor because he's very much Kurt Vonnegut-like. So he canceled class, and we both went and just got lit up drunk. He left, but my wife showed up with my father-in-law because I had his truck. And they're like, well, you can come home with us now, or you can walk home, but you're not driving this truck home. So I said, no, I'm staying at the bar. I'm just closing it out. And it's November. It's rainy. It's about 30 degrees outside. It's Miamisburg. I live in Farmersville. Yeah, I can walk there. I could walk there when the bar closes. Easy. That makes perfect sense.
A light stroll.
Yeah, I'll take a jog. Just shoot on down the road. So later on that evening, I was woken up by two sheriffs. I'm in a Shell station, and they're putting handcuffs on me, saying, come with us. And did you do this? Did you do that? Well, at this point, I'd learned don't say anything, so I wasn't saying anything. And I didn't know.
Life lessons.
I didn't know what I did, what I'd done, what was going on. And then they looked at me. So, of course, the first thing is, you know, if anything, when you're in trouble, the first thing you do is you call your wife and blame her because it was all her fault for taking the truck. Because had I just been able to drive home completely drunk, I am sure my evening would have gone better, you know, because that makes perfect sense. So somehow that was all her fault. And then I get news from them. They're like, well, we are charging you with 15 burglaries and conspiracy to make crystal meth because you tried to break into a CVS. And apparently we're going to blame you for these, I think it was 15 other CVSs had been broken into and somebody had stolen the Sudafed to make crystal meth. So they were just going to put all that on me and then close those cases and be done with them.
Wow.
Because obviously you've already got an aggravated burglary. We know you run around with a cocaine dealer.
So
your name pops up in all the wrong circles, I'm sure, when we arrest people. I'm sure your name has come up for all the wrong reasons. So we're going to pin all that on you, and you're done. Wow. So I called Sarah the next day, and I was in a much better mood of, yeah, maybe this is my fault. And she had started going to church with my mom at the Vineyard at the time. And she said, well, I'm going to these codependency classes. And when you get out, you're going to the dependency classes. And I'm thinking, oh, that's sweet. She thinks I'm getting out. But I'm thinking, at that time, I already did 4.5 years for ag burglary. Now I've got 15 burglaries hanging over my head. I thought I'm doing at least 20 years.
Yeah.
At least. So, sure enough, I'm just like, well, I'm done in here, but I'll play along, and I'm, you know, eventually I'm going to have to make the phone call of, you might want to start seeing other people because, you know, I am not coming out anytime soon. My attorney at that point was a friend of her dad's, and I knew she was serious when he came in, and he's like, Tim, I'm a pretty good, you know, criminal defense attorney, but I'm an outstanding divorce attorney, and I won't be working for you. And I was like, okay. Yeah, she's pretty serious about when I get out, I'm supposed to be going into recovery. So I knew she'd hit her limit. I knew I'd pushed her as far away as I could, and I'd finally had her right to the edge to where, you know, it was over. I thought, you know, well, I'm going to prison now for at least another 20 years. I'm done. And I remember that night in the prison cell. And the prison at the time, it was the county jail, Montgomery County, and it was on overflow status, which meant it's got guys sleeping in the gym and sleeping out in the floor area. Wow. Well, I'm in a cell that's got a bunk for another person in it. They never put another person in there. I was the only person in there. So, that should have kicked on of, oh, God's pulled me off on my own again. He's about to deal with me. And I was there. I'd been reading through the Bible, and, you know, it had always been on my heart to do prison ministry. And all of a sudden, just out of the blue, I heard, Tim, you're going to do prison ministry. You can do it from in here or out there. The choice is yours. And I'm like, oh, am I hallucinating? What was that? I'm like, you know, it sounded like me talking to myself, but I don't talk to myself like that. You know, I would not say something to myself. It was just, I knew it was God. And I'm like, all right, God, I'm not getting out of here. But if you can get me out, sure, I'll do it out there. Whatever. But yeah, let's see that happen. The next morning, the guard said, hey, we've got you on video. I said, you do? He said, yes. You walked up to the CVS. Apparently, you thought it was a good idea that you could just break the door, go inside a store, warm up for a little bit. That was my plan.
Oh.
Now I remembered. I was like, oh, yeah, that was my drunken plan. I'll just break into a store, warm up a little bit, and then continue on my way to Farmersville because that makes sense. But apparently I fell down in the parking lot, according to the video, fell down taking the cap off a fire hydrant, fell down several times while trying to break the door to the to the CVS. I broke the window. Well, I cracked it, then fell down. Then the alarm went off, and then I crawled through traffic into the Shell station. Where at the Shell station, I went to the storeroom, opened up two boxes of toilet paper, dumped them out on the floor, and made a nest and passed out in it. And that's where they found me. He's like, so you haven't broke into any place. You never stepped inside the door, so we can't charge you with any of these burglaries. So we're just charging you with vandalism. Pack your stuff up and go home.
Wow.
I'm like, no way. What? You know, it's really bad when the first words you went, are you sure? Are you sure about this? And then, you know, one guy told me as I'm, you know, as I'm leaving, he's like, yeah, they've been made mistakes before. He said, and so, you know, sometimes I've seen them go rearrest guys right there in the lobby. Dude, I shot through that lobby. I was bolting through alleyways. I was ducking behind stuff. I called her from a payphone in a bush. Like, I am on this street just in case they messed up. Please pick me up. I am walking in this direction. Surprisingly enough, she picked me up. And then she just sent me to celebrate recovery for the first time. And that's where I met Jerry, Damon, Oscar, and Don. And they were my group. Yeah, this was back when this was almost 20-plus years ago. And so they were the little small group that I was in then. This was before Don actually started doing school and any of that. Damon was this cool dude, had pink hair because his daughter wanted pink hair, so he did his hair too. Oscar was great. And they were the first group of guys to just love on me for who I was. And I hadn't had that in a long time in a church. And it was just, you know, and I joke with Jerry all the time. It's like, ever since Jerry prayed for me, ain't been back to jail. His prayers work. You know, and they're the reason, I mean, me and Sarah irritated the stuff out of Jerry and Lynn to get them to follow us to this church 4 years ago. It's like, we're going to this new church. You need to come. Ring. Hey, we're going to this new church. Have you tried out this church? I think Lynn eventually just came just to shut me up. But they came over. I basically brought my support with me when I came over here. So
drug them here.
That's great. So that's when it all started to and I mean, there's been relapses along the way several times, I am sure. More times than I care to admit. I am more than sure about that part. But, you know, but that's a normal part of trying to get it together. And then, and that's when Chaplain Graves sort of entered in again to push me under the spiritual bus. I didn't know where to get started doing prison ministry. So I called the guys that used to come in. One of them gave me his phone number. And I called the guys that used to come in on Tuesday night Bible study. And he, oh, Brother Tim, how you doing? And I was kind of shocked that he remembered me because, you know, he said, oh, yeah, come in with us Tuesday night. We'll get you a volunteer badge, and you can just come in and do the ministry with us. So I just went in with them, and next thing I know, Chaplain Graves showed up one night, and he's like, oh, well, Tim, how you doing? Is this where you feel? I'm like, I just feel like God called me to do prison ministry. I'm not sure what to do next. Oh, well, to prepare a sermon and come in this Sunday and give your sermon at the church. I'm like, really?
He's out of the frying pan.
He's like, yeah, just give a sermon. Here's how long you got to talk. Just tell your story. Wow. You'll be fine. So, and then he kept me in there doing that stuff. And the point of he finally retired, and they gave me a set of keys to the prison I'd done time in and let me run religious services. I mean, you'd need a master's degree, and they let me run it for, it was almost 2 years before they finally put a chaplain in there. Wow. And me and another guy that were locked up together actually ran religious services, and then things opened up, just crazy things. I knew God said do prison ministry, but then just crazy things started opening up with, now you're going to be in AmeriCorps Vista, and we want you to take this program that works with poverty and use it and make a program for reentry. And now we want you to help rewrite some of these laws that are in Ohio so we can actually hire a guy that's gotten out of prison and not have to worry about him not being able to find a job and getting back into the same old lifestyle. So and just there was just politicians, and it was just weird to have the ear of some of the people I had, because I'm looking at it going, I just relapsed like 2 weeks ago. I don't know what I'm doing, and this governor wants to talk about changing Ohio's law, rewriting something into the, you know, into the law. That's just, it went crazy, and then it ended. They turned DCI into a women's prison, and I thought, I don't have the one figured out at home. No, I'm out.
Draw the line. Yeah,
I am done. This is no. This is a horrible idea. I do not need to be in here with a bunch of women. And no, no. And sure enough, I told the other guys. It's like, yeah, we need to step out. And they did. They stepped out in handcuffs. A few months later, with, you know, with their hands covering their faces. And it's like, yeah, that's. You just need to be gone. And Sarah was pregnant with Zoe. So I just became a stay-at-home dad and thought, well, you know, prison ministry, well, that was it. That was a good run. That was fun. So what's next? I guess I'll just raise kids, you know. So, because I was still struggling. You know, we changed all those laws to where they could hire you after you got out of prison. But everything I did was never retroactive, so it never helped me. So I was still having trouble, you know, getting the job. And I was working for our church at the time. And I was getting paid pretty good to do what I was doing, but there came a point in time where they looked at me and said, well, Tim, you can either have this job or you can do prison ministry. And it's like, well, that's kind of what God called me to do, so I'm going to go jobless and do this prison ministry thing and hope God feeds me. I'm looking for some birds to show up and drop some berries or something, you know, but but he did. I mean, I'd volunteer up at the LEC. And when we were doing the prison ministry stuff, and I can't tell you how many times just money just showed up. There was a $100 bill stuck under the tire one day. We were shopping at Goodwill. I went and got a pair of pants, tried them on for Sarah, reached into the back pocket, and there's a 50 in the back pocket. It just, God provided in just some crazy ways during that time. So it was, it was amazing, but
that's
it was fun. And now it's sort of starting all over again. So we're going to see what the next step goes, because now I've run into a guy that I did circles with. He was actually one of my circle leaders, which was a family not in poverty that surrounded you while you were in poverty, and we were in poverty at that time, and a lot of that was my own, you know, get a bank account at U.S. Bank, drive around to the back, withdraw $600 of the $5 I put in to start the account, and then never show up to the bank again. So needless to say, our poverty was pretty self-made, and it's all Sarah's fault. It is now. That's the story I'm going with. No, but I ran into him, and he actually teaches at the juvenile detention center in Troy. So he said, well, we don't have anybody doing their Sunday service. Would you do the Sunday service at the juvenile detention center? Wow. So that started out there. So
that's incredible.
So now I'm doing it again, but now I'm doing it with teenagers, because teenagers listen so well.
You said, I know what I'll do. I'll work with teens. Optimal situation.
Sadly, I was excited about it because I get to work with them before they get to prison number, because that's the thing is they don't understand is you don't know exactly how bad that number is going to affect you once you have it. I mean, even the job I have now, if they would have done my background check just 3 months earlier, I wouldn't have got the job, because they go back 20-something years that you're off paper. And if you don't have a clean background, they won't hire you. So even with the laws that were changed, they can still do what they want to do. I mean, it's a company. It's theirs. So, but all that is just, you know, and I'm just trying to tell those kids of, you know, you really stick yourself in a corner if you get that. I'm like, right now it's juvenile. You can get rid of that. That can get expunged and scrubbed away, and you don't have to worry about that as much later on in life. But yeah, so that's where we're going.
I want to brag on you for a minute, because
please do.
Get ready.
This is the part.
Get ready.
Big adjectives. Tim, lots of syllables.
So I interned here for 3 months. You know, I never knew about this. I never knew that Tim has worked with Kasich and went to Washington, D.C. He doesn't come off as, I'm Tim, and I've run this great prison ministry. And some of us in ministry do that. But Tim, you really exemplify Christ in your humility, in your obedience, and also in the fact that you're a criminal. Because Jesus was a criminal. And he died a criminal's death. And we forget, we forget who's really in this book. That there are criminals and murderers and horrible people that God chose to do his work. And that's the amazing part about who God is that God just doesn't look at that 4.5 years of your life and go, wasted time. He can somehow take that and use that to change lives. And the way that you do that is an example to all of us. And so thank you so much for coming up here, for telling your story. Will you tell us a little bit how you run your the prison ministry with the juveniles at this point? Because I think what you do is really, really cool. And I think how you run that is really good.
Well, I run it by not running it. That's it's my sort of my code, goal in life. Don't run anything.
Hands off,
don't,
right?
You know, a lot of the reasons I don't tell people I do stuff is in case I horribly mess it up, then I can't be blamed for it. So
nobody knows.
But what we did is, I know they're in juvenile, and I remember prison as an adult, and you're told what to wear, when to wear it, how you have to have your bed, how you have to have your cell, when to eat, when not to eat, do this, do that, do the other thing. And I know at a juvenile detention center, it's even worse. I mean, they have these kids lined up to go everywhere. I'm like, so they get told what to do all the time. I don't want to go in on Sunday and just tell them, here's what God wants you to do. Because that's how I was taught.
Right.
And that did not work out for me. And these kids have already got just, they've done more than I've done. And they're 12. You know, I look at kids that were like, oh, my mom and dad sold crystal meth. They used to blow it in my face from the time I was 6 years old till now. So I got hooked on meth when I was 11. It's like, what? So, you know, so it's like, I'm not going to tell them what to do. I'm not going to throw this in their face. I'm going to make this their church. So what we decided to do is we decided, well, somebody who wants to open up with prayer. And we just, and they're like, well, I've only been a Christian for a day. Good. That's time to learn. You open up with a prayer. Well, how do I do that? We'll just talk to God. So they open up with prayer. They pick the Bible verse that we're going to talk about. This way they go back and they look in their Bibles all week long and they just come in with questions. And that's what the sermon's about. You guys decide what the sermon is. You guys decide what songs we do. It's your church. I just sit in the back and do nothing, which I'm so good at. And it's ministry by doing nothing. I don't know. I'm going to write a book. That's going to be the name of my book. My ministry is I do nothing. But it's just, they've taken ownership of it. We've got 32 kids that are in there, and the shortest amount of kids we've had is 28 show up on Sunday. Because it's theirs. Mm. It's something that's theirs.
Yeah.
And then they can just come in there, and I've been having them do testimonies now for... They've been doing them for the past 4 weeks is when I started it, and they've still been doing them. I haven't been there in a couple weeks because I got some good guys, and they're doing it. It's letting them, you're doing the sermon. Your testimony is the sermon. You do the sermon. And they're just letting loose of their stories, and they're getting to know each other, and they're taking ownership of it because I want them to get out and know I don't care that you're 13, 14 years old. When you get to your church, if you want to go give a sermon, you ask the pastor if you can give a sermon at 13. Yeah. I don't care. It's your church.
Yeah, that's right.
And if you get to a church that says, no, you just need to be seen and not heard, then find something different.
It's not a church.
Get someplace different.
Yeah.
You know, and so I keep praying for them that when they get out, they can find that church and, you know, don't do what I did. And that's a lot of what my testimony is. Mm-hmm. Here, kids, is what we don't do. and I'm going to lead by example. Here's what I did. Didn't work. I was a criminal. I was terrible at it. You know? But the criminal thing, that's my favorite thing to tell them is, you know, the first man into heaven was a thief on a cross. I'm like, Christ didn't even get down to pick up his people yet. God's chosen people weren't even there yet. This guy went first.
Right.
Because Jesus said, today you'll be with me.
Right.
And then we'll go get the rest of them. You know?
That's good.
So, I mean, that's just, I just want them kids to know that no matter how much you've screwed up, you're probably going to screw up again, but it's okay. You know, it's just, it just is what it is. I mean, God's going to use you regardless.
You don't really have
you
didn't really have a say either.
No. Well, you know, I had a choice. I could stay in prison and do prison ministry, or I could get out and do it. That's
right.
That was my say. But he didn't. And, you know, and the other thing was I always thought God was going to tell me to do something that I didn't want to do. I didn't realize that he made me a specific way, and what I was passionate about is what he wants me to do.
Exactly.
The thing I'm passionate about. So, you know, I thought he was going to send me to some country and I was going to get eaten by a lion.
Right.
You know, I don't want to do this. I don't. So, but sadly, now I'm more comfortable in a prison cell jail than I am in a church. But that's a whole other story. But, yeah. But, yeah, that's just, I mean, he uses your, and then the other thing with their testimony is, you know, God always is going to put somebody in your life that needs to hear your testimony.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I've had just strangers just show up and just all of a sudden just spill their guts on something that's like something I did. And it's like, how do you even know to talk to me? I mean, that was the great thing about the Vineyard is when you were the prison minister /, well, unknown prison minister, Steve Bowen ordained me, but he didn't tell anybody else, I think. So, but, and then the janitor, you got more confessions from folks because they're like, oh, we've heard your story, so we know you're not going to judge because we didn't do what you did, Tim. But, you know, but let me tell you this. Here's what I'm going through. So, you know, I was working with guys, had a lot of my volunteers were guys that had to do community service. So it's just like, well, just come in here, grab a mop, stand next to me, let's go clean some stuff. You know? So I just he's going to bring people into your life that need to hear your testimony. Your testimony is for somebody. It's not for everybody. Like, I mean, I still run into people that never tried drugs.
What?
You've never even tried? You never smoked cigarettes? What? What's wrong with you? How did you not do any of that stuff? You know?
Yeah.
So your testimony just really isn't for everybody. But somebody's been in your everybody's been in somebody's shoes at one point in time.
Mm-hmm.
Right. There's probably 1,000 guys in that book that have done just the dumb stuff I've done.
Right.
You know, I've sat under the little vegetable and thought, just kill me, God. I'm not going in there and doing that. You know, I've been swallowed by the whale for 4.5 years. You know, I've been there. I see all that stuff now, and it's fun. Sometimes it's scary, and, you know, and it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard some days, but you just keep going, and you just regardless, he's going to see you through stuff. He's going to take you along for the ride, kicking and screaming or willingly or whatever, but you're going.
Wow.
It's like being pushed down the slide.
It's quite a ride. It's quite a ride. I think we may have hit on this, but I want to ask you, could you just point out for us some of the differences between the Tim that was lying in a pile of toilet paper on a shell bathroom floor and the one we see today? What's the difference in your life between then and now?
The biggest is I have a bed. I sleep in a bed now.
Really?
Yes. I don't sleep on a shell station floor with toilet paper. It's amazing.
God can get you a bed. That's the sermon for today.
That should be it.
If you don't have one,
that'll be my next book. No, it's just now I look forward to living again. Mm. I mean, there for a while, I didn't want to get up. Just kill me in my sleep. You know, the whole, oh, curse God and die. I tried. I keep cursing him. He won't kill me. Kill me now. But, I mean, I didn't feel like I had as much to live for. Now, the girls, Sarah included, is one of the girls. It's a good life. It's a great life.
That's good, Tim. That's good. Well, unless you have something else you want to share.
I swear I used to be a hardened criminal. I swear.
Don't you feel that? Are you guys terrified? I am.
Chris Jackson isn't even here, and I'm channeling him.
Where's that coming from? Those of you who know, you know. You know what we're talking about. Stick around. You'll see that. You know, he's going to be back. So
if he's watching this on Facebook, I'm expecting a text.
We're going to get something's going to happen, you know. Tim, thank you for being vulnerable, for coming up here and just laying it all out. Because the way church is supposed to be is that we're different than the rest of the world. We don't expect you to be any different than you are because we know God knows exactly who you are. There's no way to hide from God. No way. A bunch of these guys in this book tried. It's really kind of funny. We'll talk about those stories another time. You can't hide from God. So there's no reason to hide from us. We can't hide from each other. In the end, it all gets revealed. We can't hide it. So why try? And if you've connected with something, you know, Tim has said today, or you've connected with something that Don or Jay or Brian has said, if we've talked in this series about marriage issues, we've talked about suicide, we've talked about drugs, we've talked about prison, we've talked about the bottom. And maybe you're there, maybe you're in some other spot in life, and you just feel like this is hopeless. God can't turn this around. If God can do what he did in Tim's life and in other people's life, he can do that for you. God is not a God who looks at the rest of your life and says, well, throw that away. That's useless. He wants to take your passion. He wants to take your history. He wants to take your scars and change those and use those for good. I mean, look at Tim's life. That 4.5 years, not wasted. God's using that to change people's lives right now. And we're a church who not only wants to hear about what's happened to you and what you're going through, but to try to help you and through God, through his power and grace and strength, to be able to use that for good. Because we have a God who's that strong, that powerful, that he can take the bad, the ugly, and turn it into something really, really good. I want to thank you guys for coming here. The prayer team is going to come up. So if you would just like some prayer, if you would like to talk to somebody, I'm here, Becca's here, or talk to anyone that's a regular here. We're not going to judge. We don't have any room for it. We don't have time for it. Sorry. So as we close, thank you again, Tim, for coming up, for the jokes, for the laughter. It's been fun.
You offered me Frickers and said, hey, you want to go to Frickers? I'm buying. Can you do your testimony? Dude, you had me at Frickers.
Chicken chunks is all you, man, you need in ministry.
All I needed was free chicken and a bowl full of blue cheese.
Thanks, Tim. All right. Let's give it up for Tim. I'll pray to close this out. Lord, I thank you that you don't give up on us and that you became a human being and you were tempted and you struggled and you were bruised and broken and life tore you up. And you did that so you could just relate to us. And I thank you for that. I pray that you would be present with us this week, that right now that your peace would come over us, that we would know what your will is for our life. You've called us to a purpose. Just like Tim, you have something for us. You have some good works for us to do. Would you show us what that is and help us be obedient? Lord, whatever we're facing, give us the strength to carry on. Continue to unite us and make us your people and carve us into your image. That way we can show the world the love and the acceptance we find in you. It's in your name we pray, Lord. Amen. Have a good week.
The message you just listened to was from a weekend gathering at Shelter Church. If you'd like to learn more about us or speak with a pastor, please visit us online at shelterchurch.tv.